Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 441. I'm David Elliott, and the National Association of Podcasters has filed articles of impeachment against me for my crimes, namely covering the Heroes Reborn issues. But I laugh in their faces, and I will continue to produce terrible podcasts about bad comic books, no matter what they say. Today, the 441st issue of the Fantastic Four is Fantastic Four, Volume 3, Number 12, from December 1998. Once More, O Green and Pleasant Land, written by Chris Claremont, with art by Salvador LaRocca and some other dude. Anthony Williams. I ought to have that stuff handy when I'm doing these podcasts. And so, it's a big, double-sized anniversary issue celebrating 441 issues of the Fantastic Four. It's kind of an odd number to be happy about. Oh, they're celebrating 12 issues of the Fantastic Four. Well, you know, it's not every day you reach issue 12. Actually, in the case of the Fantastic Four, it kind of is just about every day. So the issue picks up back in Genosha, where Reed has been kidnapped, and Sue, Ben, and Johnny have been body-jacked, their minds placed in the bodies of three Genosian slave people. And in the capital city of Hammer Bay, which would be a great name for a porno studio, war has been going on between the masters and the slaves. The U.S. government, on the side of the masters, of course, and the city has been heavily damaged and is not looking too good. The three members of the FF include Johnny, who's in the body of an old man, Ben, who's in the body of a tall black guy, and Sue is in the body of a teenage girl with dark hair. They're walking away from a car crash that they had at the end of last issue, and they're walking through the rubble of the city. Ben says, "Genosha always considered itself a 21st century country. Looks like they got themselves a 21st century war to go with it." It's a war over slavery. More like a 19th century war. Johnny is still freaking out because he does not like being an old man. He'd rather be like Ben, who is a young black man. Huh. Johnny's gonna have to wait 17 years for that wish to come true. So there's a little flashback to the end of last issue, when the person who now occupies Johnny's real body flamed on, creating a Nova Strength flame, blowing the top off the skyscraper. Johnny starts crying about all the people who must have died in that building. Sue tells him that they should bring Crucible to justice for his crimes. Ben shouts out, "Get to cover, you two! We got company!" It's a big blimp. An armored blimp, which seems like that would be too heavy to fly. Ben says it must be using some kind of anti-gravity technology to keep it in the air. Johnny wonders why they're running. They could be friendly. It could be a friendly blimp. Yeah. It could just be the fine folks at Goodyear, providing aerial coverage of the Genosian Civil War. Sue says they better assume the worst. Maybe it's not a blimp after all. But maybe it's Rush Limbaugh come to cheer on the pro-business slave masters of Genosha. That would be the worst thing that could happen. Some other people on the ground shoot up at the blimp, and the blimp shoots back. It's definitely not the Goodyear blimp. And the people on the ground try to surrender by raising a white flag, but the blimp shoots at them anyway and kills them all. Next, a red sports car goes speeding down the road. It's one of those flying shield cars, and the blimp starts shooting at it. Johnny wants to run over and see if the people inside are okay, but then a group of Genosian troopers appear at that location, and they gather up a survivor from the car, and they leave. After they're gone, Sue and the others go over to check, and they find that the driver is dead, but the person in the passenger seat is still alive, and in the back seat, there's four kids, all of them also alive. So I'm kind of confused about who was taken out of the car by the bad guys. So Sue starts helping the kids out of the damaged vehicle, but they don't know what to do with them. The lady in the passenger seat says there's a manhole cover down the street, and they can go down there and follow the sewer line. Sounds like a shitty plan, which is probably why Ben wants to stay behind. He's got a big gun, and he says he'll keep a watch for the bad guys if any come back. The lady in the passenger seat drops a bomb in the car, and when the bad guys do return, the car blows up, killing the soldiers. So the lady and Ben head down the sewer to catch up with Sue, Johnny, and the kids. And then the lady from the car pulls out a gun and tells the three of them they're under arrest. So next, the three of them are in the Citadel headquarters of the Genosian State Security Service, home of the magistrates. And the three of them are tied up to some chairs, and they try to tell the magistrates who they really are, but they don't believe them. The door opens, and in comes Reed Richards, who seems to be interested in the three prisoners' stories. Sue gets up. She's not tied to the chair after all, but her wrists are tied behind her back. She runs over to Reed and tries to convince him that she's the real Sue, but soon she realizes it's hopeless. And then the lady they saved from the car tells her to get back, away from Reed. But Reed looks at her, and thanks to the power of love, he realizes it is his wife, and he gives her a big hug. And I'm sure he's especially happy now that Sue is in the body of a teenage girl. So later, Reed is giving the others, and us, a rundown of what's been going on in Genosha. This includes some terrorist attacks by a group of mutants who call themselves the Acolytes, the government and the economy collapsed, the country broke out in civil war, the country's magistrate corps broke up and started to choose sides, many of the mutant slaves have been killed in the war already because they were genetically engineered to be nonviolent. The war began to wind down, and the chief magistrate, Chief Anderson, started to restore order and justice. And things got worse, with a radical group led by Crucible stroking the flames of racial hatred in the country. So the government of Genosha needed help, and the X-Men and the Avengers were unavailable, and because Chris Claremont wasn't writing the X-Men or Avengers. So this damn story had to be shoehorned into the Fantastic Four. So the Genosian government turned to Reed Richards for help, hoping that his big brain can help solve the crisis, not knowing that coincidentally he had encountered Crucible before, and ever since, Reed hasn't been so smart. Now at this point, Johnny, Sue, and Ben, even though they're not in their real bodies, are wearing FF uniforms. Where the hell did they get the extra FF uniforms? It is not explained. You know, first of all, they're not even at their headquarters in New York. And second of all, Ben is a tall, skinny guy, and Johnny is an old, chubby guy. Where did they find uniforms that would fit? This is going to eat at me for the rest of the issue. I just know it. Sue says they need to teach Crucible a lesson he'll never forget. And Reed says he has a plan, but it's risky. And then ship flies by and starts bombing the Citadel, and the three people who are in the stolen bodies of Ben, Johnny, and Sue show up, and they want the people in the Citadel to surrender or die. So Reed and the others split up. Reed and another Genosian magistrate, the chief magistrate, jump into some teleportation machine and disappear. And Ben, Johnny, and Sue are together, and Ben says, "It's clobbering time." I don't know how he's going to do any clobbering in that body, though. Little skinny dude. So next, Sue finds herself face to face with the woman who took her body, and the woman says, "You want your precious body back? Then take it if you can." And she turns invisible, and Sue is listening for her footsteps and manages to kick her in the stomach, and they start fighting. Ben has to fight the guy in the thing body. And by the way, what kind of guy would agree to have his mind transferred over into a rock monster? He's getting the worst part of that deal. Ben should be like, "You know what? Keep it. I don't want my body back." Especially since we recently learned, here in 2015, that the Thing doesn't have genitals. Why would he want that body back? He has no genitals. And I'm sure the tall black guy that Ben is in the body of, I'm sure his equipment is, shall we say, satisfactory. The guy in the Thing body tries to punch Ben but misses and hits the wall, and there seems to be some kind of black goo that his arm gets stuck in. And the black goo gets stuck on his other arm, too, and then his legs, and Ben says it's something that Reed cooked up. Black goo. Sounds like my kind of cooking. It's kind of like an adhesive used by the Trapster. He starts struggling to break free, and back with old man Johnny, he meets up with the guy in the Human Torch body, and Johnny has some kind of device that makes a lot of noise and emits a lot of bright light, disorienting the fake human torch. They're in a sealed-off room, and Johnny puts on a mask, and his whole body is covered in fireproof clothing as fake Johnny tries to burn him. And eventually, he uses up all the oxygen in the room, and he flames off. So he just goes over, and he grabs Johnny. But then someone blows a hole in the wall, and fake human torch, he can flame on again. Meanwhile, Reed is leading one of the Genosian soldiers, the chief magistrate, into the beehive, the headquarters of the Enclave. You know, the dudes from back in FF66. And the Enclave has a bunch of minions that the Genosian soldier is shooting at, while Reed goes stretching around, looking around the beehive. He finds a room where a bunch of people are in glass tubes, submerged in liquid, the home of horrible human experimentation. And Reed finds Dr. Morlock, one of the evil scientists, also from issue 66. Reed calls the experiment an abomination, but Morlock says, "You have to sacrifice a few to make the world a better place." Reed grabs him by the shirt and says he doesn't approve of his methods. And then Morlock says they've reached an impasse, and he needs help. Another brilliant mind, perhaps. Hint, hint. Boy, he's barking up the wrong tree with Reed Richards. But anyway, they start fighting, and Reed isn't worried. Morlock mentions that he's been using some of Reed's ideas as part of his experiments, and he mentions some very important data he obtained from Reed that was given to Reed by Alyssa Moy. I don't know why he has to mention Alyssa Moy. And this information could change the world if he could just figure it out. But he's not going to have time for that. He gets zapped by some kind of ray and seemingly killed, but before he disappears, Morlock seems happy, and he says, "At last, I'm free." Reed looks over and sees the person who shot Morlock. It's his old friend, Dr. Shinsky, also from Fantastic Four 66, who was wearing the costume of Crucible. It's nice that they had Crucible turn out to be an old Lee Kirby character, but I'm still not sure how he connects with the Genosians. He calls Morlock unworthy and a weakling. And next, he starts firing laser blast at Reed, who stretches around, dodging the blast. Reed finds a lever and pulls it, opening a steam valve that shoots hot steam down on Crucible. How convenient that Crucible just so happened to be standing directly under the valve. Elsewhere in the facility, the chief magistrate soldier woman, she's still firing away at anything that moves, when the golden lady, Aisha, a product of Enclave experimentation, just like Adam Warlock was, enters the room and approaches the soldier, who turns and fires at her. And it does no good. Aisha gets close and smacks the soldier in the face and picks her up by the neck. Ooh, catfight. Meow. Back in another room, Crucible's telling Reed, "Join us, Richards, or die. That is your only choice." Just then, the thing busts through the roof with the human torch and the invisible woman, and they're still dressed up in their leather outfits. Crucible calls them the first recruits that he and Aisha, oh, these names are killing me, will lead against the world. But not so fast, Crucible. Ben, Sue, and Johnny, they rip off their leather outfits, revealing their FF uniforms underneath. Turns out, they defeated the fake FF and got their bodies back, and this was done off-panel for some reason. So Crucible, as you can imagine, starts to run away. Ben wants to chase after him, but Reed says they have more important work to do. He has Johnny blast open the glass containers holding all the humans who are being experimented on. Reed says they have to get them out of there and to safety. Back with Aisha, she's still holding up that soldier by the neck, and Crucible runs in and tells her that the real FF have their bodies back. Aisha says that she'll deal with them, but then back with the FF, they're carrying all the people back to the blimp, which they captured, also off-panel. Back with that Genosian soldier, Chief Anderson, she pulls out something called a black hole grenade. What does a black hole grenade do? Well, she pulls the pin and waves the grenade in Aisha's face, and it opens up some kind of gateway to another dimension and starts sucking in the soldier into another universe, followed by Aisha and finally Crucible. Reed looks down and sees the entire Enclave building collapsing in on itself, and they finish loading up the blimp, and they get the hell out of there. So a few days later, the FF are back at their warehouse headquarters, and Franklin survived being left in the care of a total stranger from another dimension, Dr. Val Cooper, Special Assistant to the President for Mutant and Metahuman Affairs. That means it's her job to provide mutant chicks for the President to fool around with. You know, the President's mutant affairs. "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Teak." So Dr. Cooper is telling the FF that there may be repercussions for their violation of the UN embargo of Genosha. I'm not sure how rescuing a teammate violates an embargo. That makes no sense. Cooper goes on to say that the world wants Genosha left alone to deal with their own problems, so that the mutant-human war there doesn't spread. Dr. Cooper doesn't seem to agree with the policy of allowing Genosha to become a mutant ghetto and hoping the problem just goes away on its own, but her hands are tied. She does tell the FF that they have her personal gratitude. So after she leaves, Reed expresses concern to Ben that he doesn't like the direction the world is heading. But Ben says, at least they got rid of Crucible and Aisha. For now. The issue ends with Reed putting Franklin on his shoulders and taking him and Sue out to see a Yankees game. And that brings to a close another year of Fantastic Four adventures. Coming next time, we're going to party like it's 1999 and the FF face off against the return of another old-time FF villain, Ronan the Accuser. Will there be action? Of course. Will there be fighting? Most certainly. Will there be a dance-off? We can only hope. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes or at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.
Ready? One. You will do this four times with the left, four with the right, then eight times with both.